The weather's not very nice now. It's gotten really cold. It should be snowing pretty soon, shouldn't it? And the time now is exactly 11:30 a.m. And break ended about, 15 minutes ago. I can't think of anything to say. I'm in a different study now. It's a big one. There's Phil in here, and me, and another girl named Shelley. Shelley, are you in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, Shelley's in here. The reason it sounds a bit messed up at the start is because we've been messing around with it, because it just wasn't coming through. It was really sounding funny and misty and everything. So I kind of disregard everything until now, unless I make a boob again, and we disregard everything until the end, and you'll know it's all over. The time now is going on 20 to 12, so we've been trying to figure out what's wrong with this thing for about 10 minutes. I guess I've already told you about the old man in the village film I go to see named Arthur. He's how old is he? He's going on 81. Anyway, he hasn't been very well lately, and he's been really worried he's going to die. And he's going to give me, he keeps on showing me this watch and stuff he's going to give me when he's gone, like before his will. And he's doing okay. On my birthday, which is on Sunday, which I told you about on the other side, we're going to go up there and visit him, have a little party. I hope he doesn't die because he's a fantastic old man. It's really sad because a lot of people, before we had heard about him, when people had first gone to visit him, the people in the neighborhood said, oh, him, yeah, he's really grumpy, beware for him. But he really wasn't like that. He was really cool and nice. It's just really kind of sad that these people got really jealous of him because he's got young people to come visit him, whereas they don't. It's only because they're so mean and stuff. Annie Moffitt, I got your letter and thanks a lot for it. And I wrote you one, except we've got a postal strike over here, as you will probably know if you've heard the other side. And so I couldn't send it off, and you won't get it for a long time until the postal strike's over. But I want to thank you anyway. I have a funny thing that you told me about your family. Crack up. Let's see. I'd like, who's ever interested in my friends, everyone, you know, to be able to hear this. Seems I'm going to be saying more than I'd ever write down in a letter. So, my arm's okay. I went to the hospital with Phil to get an appointment made. And a real meanie in the inquiries desk came and, you know, started blabbering on about this and that and was really mean. So we just walked out because she wasn't about to get me an appointment. So I'm going to have to get one through our school doctor, and I don't like him, but that will just have to be. I'm in my study again now. Phil's gone. He's going to go to one of his classes. We're getting on okay. We laugh and cry and everything else, which is only natural in the boarding school. I mean, sometimes you get so pent up in here and upset, and you just cannot get out. I mean, it's okay if you've got a half term in the middle of a term, you know, for 3 or 10 or so days. But this winter term, we don't have one half term. We only have a half day, and it's going to be really hard. And it's a known fact that this is the term when it's cold and it's damp and it's lousy outside, and people get sick and get upset and run away a lot. And now, because they tell us this, you know, be good, be cool, you know, try and live with it. You know, staff, why don't they just give us a half term? I figure. For Christmas, I bought myself a couple of blouses, really pretty ones. One is a white one and one's a yellow one, which I can wear with jeans or with a skirt or whatever. And the brown skirt I made in the summer is way too big for me. I can't remember the... I think we got a waist 26, and my waist isn't 26, it's about 24 and going on a half or so. And so those are way too big for me. So I've been borrowing people's skirts that were smaller and trying to get, looking for a couple that were smaller. So, and I got some, a lot of kids here knit, and I was wanting to learn how to knit as well. But until I do, I'm trying to find someone to make me a vest, you know, V-neck and sleeveless, you know, to my waist, just a short waist one to wear with a skirt or trousers, because they're really nice to wear over blouses, and they look nice as well. I'm not sure what color I want. Yeah, I'll probably get a dark color so it will go with everything I've got instead of something stupid, which will only go with one outfit. And the time now is about a couple minutes past 12, and dinner's at 1:20, and I found out a couple minutes ago that we're having pork sausages, which are really foul. In fact, the sausages at this school, aren't the sausages at this school foul?
Yeah.
I mean, the skin on them is so thick, you know, it's really revolting. You got to cut through the skin, try and find a piece of meat, and then eat that. And the meat's really lousy in that. And for pudding, we're going to have, for dessert, donuts with custard on. It isn't so bad. But see, we get so much starch in this place. It's unbelievable. Everything's, you know, starch this, starch that. Potatoes here, potatoes there. For breakfast, we had a bowl of cereal, which is about the only thing that you can eat in this school, and some rotten eggs. And it's very seldom people eat the eggs in this school because they usually have a funny odor. Well, for me, whenever I eat the school eggs, I get really sick, so I've gone off school eggs. In fact, I don't eat the breakfast anymore because I get nauseated being in there. But I eat the dinners, which is in the afternoon, what we'd call lunch, kind of a Sunday dinner in the States. And go easy on the tea, which is a supper in the States, I guess, you know, sandwiches or whatever, because they're really foul. They don't taste good. And I've been losing... Have I been losing weight, Annie?
Yeah.
I've lost some weight, so I guess you... Yeah, I think I weigh about... Well, I weigh 7 stone 7, and it's up, you know, it's not something like 7 stone 3, unfortunately. It's more than that. But I'm in my 7 stone, and 7 stones is 14 times 7 is 28. 2 stone 8. Dang. Oh, well, 7 stone's 80. 80. What is it? Oh, hell, wait a second here. 14 times 7. 7. Times 4 is 28. Okay, 7, 7, 8. It's 98, isn't it? Yeah, it's 98. 7 stones is 98 and pounds. And there are 14 pounds to a stone. No, I'm over the 7 mark, I think. So I'm about 7 stone 7 or 8 or 9. So to figure that out, I wonder how much I weigh. If 7 stone equals, did I say 98? Yeah, 98 plus 7 is about 100 and, 98 plus 7 is about 101, isn't it? 111. 104 or 5? Oh, I can't think because I'm nervous just sitting here talking to you guys. And you probably already figured it out and thinking, God, Debbie sure doesn't know her math, but you know how it goes.
And mock's start in about 5 weeks, and those are kind of our fake O-level exams to see, you know, how we're doing before the real proper exam in summer. So everyone's getting all nervous and rickety for that.
I just made the song up, and I'm just going to see what it sounds like on here. It's called The Black Man. And here it goes. Let's call The Black Man again. The black man who was taken in 1708. The white man took his freedom and taught him how to hate, to hate. He worked and built the cotton, he shovel and he grow. His master gave him nothing except gold on his back, his back. Sacrifices taken to save a family. Tears of anguish and of pain, and he lost his name. The blacks want freedom for their lives. Do not run away, away. Sacrifices taken to save a family. Tears of anguish, then of pain. The Negro lost his name.
Annie's here and Phil's here. Come over here, Annie, so they can hear you talk. And my birthday was yesterday, and I forgot to... Oh, no, I didn't. My birthday was yesterday, and I was 18. And Phil gave me a bottle of Tweed perfume, which I love, and you wouldn't buy me, Mom, when we were home. And Annie treated me... Oh, didn't you?
Did you?
I did.
Did you?
I did.
Annie treated me to the films, and Lucy Spawn, a girl here, bought me a box of Matchmakers, which is some little candies. Sweeties. And Joe Bonley gave me 7 cigarettes and a lollipop. I'm allowed to smoke in the States now. Anyway, but I don't smoke that much as I sit on the other side and probably on this side. So, good old black skirt here. Yes, it's under the chair, Annie. So how have you guys been getting on? Oh, that's good. As soon as you're not going to answer, don't think I'm rude. I'm just answering for you. Phil's coming to the States this summer. I said that also, but he is. And we still have that stupid postal strike on, but Miss King, so we could...
You're any pasta?
Who?
Pasta.
You?
Pasta.
No, sorry. You're on a tape now. Yeah, a girl that just came in, the girl next door. Is this thing too long? It is. Doesn't look very nice, does it?
Ruby.
Am I asking you?
I'm telling you.
Okay. Oh, for Christmas, I went into the store. Oh, and Dad, don't think lowly of me, but it just had to be done. I went to the store and bought Phil his Christmas present, and I gave the girl 2 pounds, and she gave me 3 pounds back. But see... See the difference. But anyway, and so I walked out figuring I had given her 5 pounds. And I looked at my wallet and I realized I still have 5 pounds. But by that time, the place was so crowded from all these Christmas shoppers because it was the day before Christmas. And so I just kept it. And don't be mad. But anyway, I bought this fantastically beautiful suede belt, really dark brown one. I've just put it on. And I'll wear it home so you guys can see it. Say something. Say something, Annie. Annie is the one that I went to New York with.
You want
Would you have some supper?
Yes, please. No, it's come
off. Oh. And there's nothing said on it.
No,
Bruce. Oh, and and about art, I got in a bit of trouble in my art class. My teachers were saying I hadn't been going. So to prove to them I have been going, I showed them a whole bunch of work that I had done. And everything's really cool now, and I've been doing a lot of extra work, and they're really happy with me. Right?
Right.
Right. Oh, and Miss Dawson said the reason she wrote such a really nasty letter home about my report was just to scare me, not you guys, but for me, so I'd even do more work. And she said she did it in all sympathy and, you know, and regard for me, not to be nasty. And half my report, see, now, when the postal strike's over, if you start sending the letter now, saying that I can see my report before it goes home, everything will be cool. Because, see, if I see my report before you do, it helps me to know what I'm going to do. Whereas if it goes straight to you guys, I never see it except from what you guys say. And I haven't read it. And the whole reason of a report is for the parents and the child to see it. So if you can, give me written permission to see it first. But I think Miss Bratcher won't need that because she's pretty upset that Miss King didn't let me see it before it went to you. Right. Oh. What else can I tell them? English is fine. I guess you know we're doing Wuthering Heights and Julius Caesar. And I'll give you a quote, Dad. This is from Julius Caesar. It's from, I can't remember, Act 2, Scene 2. And it's, no, it's from Act 1, Scene 1. And it's with Flavius and Marullus, and their two tributes, who are on the side of Pompey instead of on the side of Caesar. And they say to a whole bunch of little workmen, oh, I'm too embarrassed to say it. Shall I?
Yeah.
Wherefore rejoice? What conquest brings ye home? What tributaries follows ye to Rome? To grace and captive bonds, your chariot wheels. You blocks, you stones, you worse than senseless things. You hard hearts, you cruel men of Rome. Knew you not Pompey? Many a time and oft have you climbed to battlements, yea, chimney tops, to towers and windows, your infants in your arms, and there have sat the livelong day with patient expectation to see great Pompey pass the streets of Rome. And I have another quote that I've memorized a lot of quotes. This one's from Act 1, Scene 2, and it's Brutus when he's talking to Cassius. Cassius, be not deceived. If I have veiled my look, I turn the trouble of my countenance merely upon myself. Vexed I am of late. Well, that's enough. I've said enough on that. But anyway, see, I am working hard. And I've learned a couple of quotes from Wuthering Heights as well. But I don't wanna say any. I know one, and this is said about I think it's in the introduction about Heathcliff, and it says, as hard as the rhinestone and as rough as the sausage, the less you meddle with him, the better. Da-da. And I haven't read any of those. So, let's see. What else can I say? Right now, I was just showing Phil a couple of pictures that I've done in, you know, for art. And I'll be taking all my art, in fact, I'll be taking everything home I've ever done with me. So, and come to think of it, when Phil comes, it will be good, you know. We can just use him because he won't be bringing as much stuff as I. And so half of my poundage he can carry for me, so I won't be over 24 pounds. Because I got to bring my books home and stuff because I won't be coming back. I hope. And yesterday, because it was my birthday, we went up to visit Arthur Dickinson, our old man that I was telling you about. I know about 10 of us went up. And so what did we do? Oh, well, we had some tea. Oh, yeah, we watched a film on California, you know, in the olden days. And we took some really out of sight pictures on the way up when we got there. Anne and I, she has color film and I have black and white. And I still have about five more pictures to take. Five, seven and five, eight, nine, Perfect. I've got five more pictures to take. Thank you for sending me the picture of Jim Jones. I really appreciated that. And I appreciated the picture of me being on the dig with Tom, but I really don't like the picture very much. Well, Phil likes it.
I like it.
Annie, oh, Tom, if this gets sent to you, I showed the picture to everyone, and all the girls said, "Who's that guy in the front kneeling down with black hair and brown eyes?" I said, "Oh, that's Tom. Tom who? My brother. God, he's good looking." So you really got it made, boy. You come over here and you have all the girls on your back and you can do whatever you like. So we've been working on our study, you know, putting up pictures and stuff ever since we first came, and it's starting to look a hell of a lot better in here. So I guess it's a good thing being in a boarding school and in the study, because it's going to help me for when I go to State College, you know, Sonoma, because if I'll be in a dorm with girls, I have to get on with them in close quarters, like here at Ackworth. But about State College, I think I'm going to have to go to junior college first for the simple sake. Well, I might not have to, but there's a postal strike over here, as you know, so I can't send off my application to take my SAT exam over here. So I'm probably going to have to scrap that and come home about a week early to take my ACT exam at Berkeley High.
Unless you got Miss King to send it.
Miss King. Yeah. I don't know. The only reason the letters that she will be sending home is because she's taking them to Holland somehow or other. Oh, yeah, what I was going to say before, that girl came in asking for plasters. Miss King asked for only kids that are from overseas to bring their letters to her so she can send them to their homes. Because somehow she's got a connection in Holland and she can give it to them, because I guess they're going back to Holland, she'll send them off. But at the time, I didn't have any letters, written to you guys, because I was thinking of sending this instead. And I hadn't finished, I was having a bit of trouble finishing up with this. And so I guess it's a bit late unless I take it to her tonight.
Is it a bit late now?
I don't know. I'll have to find out. Kind of a hang-up, this postal strike, because I was, kind of counting on some letters from home. And some money, too. Same as I'm 18. No, I didn't mean that too seriously, just a bit. I do need a bit of money. And because I want you to hear Phil's accent, he's going to read a bit from the book. Oh, please, Phil.
But I can't understand it. It sounds terrible.
I don't care. They're going to hear you anyway. Here, yeah, Phil's going to read a bit.
Sound like that.
Phil's going to read a bit to you from What the Poet Owes to the Reader.
Okay. Where from?
What the Poet Owes to the Reader.
Should I
keep your head up and keep the book up so I can hear.
Okay. What the Poet Owes to the Reader. One further point. Poems in this book may be looked on as Shakespeare's or Tennyson's or Eliot's, but in other sense, they are partly the reader's also. A poet does not invent his own language. He develops the hidden powers already present in an existing language that has been created by millions of people, by ourselves and our ancestors over the centuries. As we said earlier, he draws upon the language and the experience of ordinary people, and he could not do his work without their help. We have already compared the poet to an inventor. Inventors do not work in isolation. The aeroplane is the outcome of a collaboration by countless persons, including the Wright, Watt, Sir Isaac Newton, and Archimedes. In a language, there cannot be the same simple accumulation of knowledge, but there is the same collaboration. Every one of us has some influence, for good or ill, on the English language.
That's all. Yeah. Now, so you can hear Annie's accent. She'll read you.
Whatever she can start from another stuff.
No, no. She gets upset about that. Okay, boy, we'll get you something really easy to read. I don't want to read anything. Please, Annie, so they can hear your accent. Just read a little part of mine. That's a good idea. What me to... Now you don't know how well I'm doing in school. I'll read you a bit of an essay I've written, okay? Shall I?
Yeah.
Do you know, you think it's a good idea so they know what kind of work I'm doing? I gotta find the one with the best grade on it. Give an account of Isabel's narrative about her life at Wuthering Heights. That's the question. Huh?
Is it marked?
Yeah.
What did you get?
I got a pretty good grade. 15 over 25. The style of Isabel's dialogue tends to be disjointed and broken up. The words and verbs she uses suggest violent physical action. For example, when she expresses her feelings towards Heathcliff, that incarnate goblin, unquote. Her statement implies that Heathcliff is some sort of supernatural demon. Isabel goes on to explain of how Heathcliff had not eaten for a week and also his leaving the house and not returning back until the early hours of the morning. When he did eventually return, he would proceed to lock himself in his chamber and pray until he could pray no longer. There he is... never mind. Although one finds Heathcliff inhumanly brutal, a feeling of sympathy is aroused when the reader is informed about his prayers. Heathcliff's praying reinforces the atmosphere of isolation he must be experiencing. Heathcliff becomes ruthless, hardened, and inhuman to Isabel as well as to Henley. An example of his brutality is when he jumps on and kicks Mr. Earnshaw after he has already fainted during their fight in the sitting room. Heathcliff becomes obsessed with the idea of destroying the Earnshaws and Lintons. By doing so, he also obtains complete ownership of Wuthering Heights, which he got by selling drink to Henley through mortgages, as well as Henley's son, Hareton. An account of another scene in the book illustrating a different aspect of Heathcliff. In the scene between Catherine and Heathcliff before her death, one experiences the complete superhuman love they have in their relationship. The language is desperate, gnashing, and sensual. One begins to feel sympathy for Heathcliff because of the hell he had to experience, waiting for Catherine to realize her eternal bond to him. When Heathcliff flees from Kathy's room and waits in the cold and damp of the night to find out if Catherine is still healthy, the reader again feels compassion for this man who is filled with pain and anguish. He is desperate and still willing to live for his beliefs. One cannot help but pity him and at the same time forgive him for his past massacres. And so that's one. I gotta see how much time we've got left on this. Oh, we don't have much time. Shall we play it back and see how it sounds? Okay. Oh!
Do you have much time left?
No, we've got about 5 minutes.
5 or 10 minutes.
We've only got about 5 or 10 minutes left. So, we'll just talk to you till it ends, and don't get upset, you know, if all of a sudden it ends before you think it should, because it's just that we're just talking. We probably, and anyway, if we say anything too important, we'll rub everything off and re-say it, so you'll never know I ever said that.
Let's see, what can we talk about?
I love English literature, if that means anything. And I like art, too, but, you know, I'm taking geography. Well, I think I'm going to, after a bit, I'll talk to my geography teacher and tell him I shouldn't go in for the exam. Because, personally, I don't think geography will do a thing for me. Same as in England, you have to know where all the little coal mines are in England. You know, I mean, places like Bingley or something.
Oh, how
St. Helens, Bingley, isn't that?
No, you just need to know the district, Mom.
Yeah, well, Phil, now how would you like it if you came to California and you had to know where all our little coal mines were and we don't have
them? Well, you just have to learn it.
And trying to get it done.
Yeah, it is a bit rough. I mean, the geography syllabus starts in about, what, second form, and all the world geography that you do before the actual O-level thing comes into the last part of the exam.
Debbie and I would be better doing real geography, because in the actual exam you have the choices to take.
Yeah.
This syllabus is about Europe.
The first two questions, you've got to do the one on Britain and the physical. The map reading.
Yeah, but if you know the world geography, I mean, you can pass even if you sort of fail on those
things. Yeah, but I could think the majority of maths would be on the front. If you can do your map reading, your physical geography, you can pass the mental.
I think
it's
just
don't
fail. Okay, slightly. Well, anyway, Phil has his own feelings on stuff like that. Jimmy, if he passed it with a grade, what did he pass over to you? Oh, well, he just scraped through, so he doesn't have much to say about it, seeing he's lived here all his life.